I'm Nina Turner. It is about passion, persistence, justice, dreams, insistence. Lots of people from all walks of life. I want people to see themselves in these stories.
We the people.
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 We are the people.
We the people.
We the people with yours truly, Nina Turner. As we enter into the 2018 elections and, believe it or not, begin gearing up for 2020 elections, can you believe it? It's almost upon us. Let's look back at our previous interviews. You know, each person we spoke to had an opinion on what actually makes America great and what we should change to improve it. They had goals for upcoming elections and useful tips and tricks on how you can help shape them. Come on with me. Let's hear what they had to say. So in my interview with Senator Bernie Sanders, we talked about why people want change. And we know that change in many ways is good, especially if it's a change focused on the purpose of lifting people, lifting humanity. And that really is what we need in this country right now. And as the tide is shifting towards democratic socialism, the word socialism is not a scary word as it was in the 1950s. Today's generation, particularly the millennials, really see socialism as encapsulating a value proposition of uplift. Democratic socialism means that being poor is not a crime and that we should, within the context of our social contract, one to another, believe that everybody should have the ability and the right to live out their greatest greatness, that their basic needs above all should be met, and that we really, really are all in this together. I started off by asking Senator Sanders about what is going on right now.
There is an enormous amount going on right now. And I think what, Nina, is most important for us is to focus on the most important issues impacting people of our country and the world, issues which often do not get the kind of discussion and debate that they need. In fact, there's some kind of corollary that the more important the issue, the less discussion the media will have, and the more trivial and gossipy the issue, the more attention that it gets.
And why do you think that is, Senator?
I think that's for a couple of reasons. I think, for a start, a lot of the discussion that we have in this country is obviously determined by corporate media, and corporate media has its own agenda. Their job is to maintain the status quo, maintain a system with massive levels of income and wealth inequality, maintain a system where a few people have unbelievable power over our economic and political life. And by and large, they will tolerate modest changes in that system, but certainly not fundamental changes, the changes that people like you and I have been fighting for a long time.
You say they will tolerate, but what about we? What will we, the people? The name of this show is We the People. So what will we tolerate?
Well, what we will tolerate and what we will fight for is an economy that in the wealthiest nation in the history of the world works for all of us and not just a few. And it's important for us to understand that we are the wealthiest country in the history of the world. So if we were a poor country and I said, you know what, we need enough doctors to guarantee health care to all people, we should make higher education tuition free, people would say, Bernie, you're crazy. We're a poor country. We can't afford that. We're not a poor country. So number one, what we have to deal with is this horrific level of income and wealth inequality.
Yes.
One would have thought that in the year 2018, we would be moving away from that, that Dr. King's vision that you look at people based on their character,
yes,
not on their color of the skin, or what country they came from, or what their sexual orientation was. And yet you're seeing people in the Trump world dealing with people's anger and frustration in a way. I'm different. I'm better than you. One would have thought that maybe we would have overcome them. How do we deal with that? Not easy.
But Senator, some people would say that Mr. Trump is just, he has just bubbled to the surface what was already there in the nature and the DNA of this country. So whether it's sexism, racism, age, all of the isms on the negative side of the spectrum. To that, what do you say? Because there's going to come a time where Mr. Trump is not the president of the United States of America. The same problems and struggles that we have socially, politically.
Right. I think that's true. I think that what he has done is open the door and allowed that ugliness to be more freely expressed. That he has done. But you're right in the sense. I remember I was at Howard University. This I remember distinctly. It was about a year ago. Meeting with 15 or 20 African-American young people. So I started off by saying, well, what do you guys think about Trump? And a woman, I think she was a young lady from Louisiana. She said, Trump? Oh, we've known Trump all our lives.
Amen to that.
She said, in other words, yeah, not a big deal. I mean, we're experiencing this. And it kind of took me a little bit back. But, you know, I get that. But that takes the deeper question of why, and this tribalism, which exists today in the United States, exists in Europe today?
Yes.
How do we deal with that? How do we get beyond the superficial differences that we have to understand that we are a common humanity with the same aspirations?
That's right. Does that, I mean, you know, I was just listening to a Representative Cleaver who was on the floor, and he was talking about your colleague, Senator McCain, and he was saying, you know, policy differences aside, you know, in this great time of need, we should only be wishing him well and blessings. And he talked about the fact that we are a country where this negativity has just captured a soul that we can't distinguish the difference between disagreeing with somebody on policy and still seeing their humanity. Now, I'm paraphrasing him, what would you say, Senator? And what would you say to people, you know, to people who are listening to you right now about that humanity side that we've been talking about, the solidarity side?
I think the way to beat Trumpism and tribalism is in fact to stress our common humanity. Every person listening to this program, whether they are white or black, whether they're Latino, whether they're Asian American, Native American, you know what? Every one of them wants to see their kids do well, right?
Yes.
Every person who's listening needs health care and wants good quality health care. Every person who's listening should be worried about the state of our environment. Every person is listening here wants a decent paying job so that they can live with dignity and security. So our job is to focus on that which brings us together, which includes, and I know you've talked about many people who voted for Donald Trump, and you have heard That's me right. say, more than almost anybody, Nina, that many of the people who voted for Trump did so not because they're sexist or they're homophobes or they're racist. They feel that the establishment has turned its back on them, has ignored the needs of their children. And they're saying, what about us? Pay attention to us. That's we need right. jobs for our kids. You know, my cousin is on opioids. What are you going to do about it? I can't afford to send my kid to college. So our job is to, you know, when we talk about a progressive agenda, you can talk about it as it's a human agenda. It's what people of all kinds of backgrounds need. And let's come together around that agenda. And I know you've been probably working as hard as anybody in the United States, trying to get more people involved in the political process with great success.
So I have the opportunity to interview Jacob. Jacob is a millennial. He's from California. He is a high school student. And this fall, he will be starting college at Georgetown University. But even before all of that, Jacob was very much involved in trying to make this world a better place, keenly aware that some things have gone wrong, and knowing that it was vitally important for him to utilize his voice at this age and this stage in his life. He participated in the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C., and that wasn't the only thing. He shared with me why it is so important to have empathy in our world today. We talked a lot about why it is important that people from all walks of life work together to make this world a better place, that unfortunately, in our politics, money has become speech, that rhetoric can be divisive, and that we the people, though, no matter how daunting things may look, that we the people, all the people, the boomers, the Gen Xers, the millennials, the Gen Zs and Ys, all of us have an opportunity and an obligation to make this world a better place in our space. And that in making that world a better place, we need a little more, I would say a lot more empathy, especially in politics. In this environment, you know, why is that important to have empathy? I mean, there are lots of people who are much older than you, or as I like to say, seasoned. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be called old, but, you know, more mature than you, have lived longer, and they don't necessarily think about empathy, and especially I'm thinking about social media in particular. But to have a young person like yourself say the word empathy, why did you choose that word, and why is it important to have empathy?
The older generation today has an incredible lack of empathy. Our politics today lack empathy. We don't take time to understand the other side. My own father voted for Trump. That doesn't mean I don't love him, right?
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I agree. You know, he's done a great deal for me. I can disagree with his politics. I can disagree with his stances on any number of issues. I can disagree with him when he tells me I need to come home and it's late at night. But the fact is, we need
you
to...
You must go home, Jacob. As a mother, I'm telling you, when Dad says it's time to come home, you must come home. But okay.
Of course. So I just think today we don't take the time to understand that the people we are opposed to ideologically are in fact people, and that, you know, we're all Team USA, right? We're all trying to get this common good. We're all, you know, a more perfect union. We all have that same basis we're coming from. We can differ in ideology and perspective on, you know, any whole host of issues, on, you know, a whole spread of issues, right? That's why we have political parties. That's why we divide ourselves, right? But the fact is, we need to understand each other to be able to work together. Because if we're not working together, then we're working against each other. And a divided America, I think, as we've seen historically, is the worst kind of America. The worst periods in American history have been when there has been incredible division. And the strongest periods in American history, I'm thinking of, you know, Second World War, when we're all united together, or maybe in the period immediately after. That's when we have a common sense of what it means to be an American. And through that common sense, through that unification, we're able to move forward and actually be productive, and, you know, move towards that more perfect union together as opposed to apart from each other.
Well, Jacob, I'm hoping we don't need another war to come together, but I hear you on that. You're absolutely right. In times of crisis, we tend to come together. But you really hit on something about understanding. You know, one of my favorite leadership gurus, Stephen Covey, once said, seek first to understand and then to be understood. And that's really what you're talking about right now, that we need to have more understanding regardless of the political ideology that we hold. And we talked about your dad. You love your dad, but your dad loves you too. I wanted to throw that in there as well. So Jacob, in thinking about the future, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, as a high school student, you were phone banking for Senator Sanders. As you think about that experience and you think about the future, what are some of the things that concern you the most going into 2020? Or even if they're not a concern, what are some of the things that pique you or that you see on the horizon as we move from 2018 into 2020?
I think one issue that is certainly going to be a part of the 2020 campaign, it's already something politicians are talking about today, is corporate money. It's the issue of what has happened in the wake of the Citizens United decision, right? Where you have essentially unregulated spending that corrupts our politics. It corrupts our politicians. And I think, you know, it's going to be 10 years after that decision. We're going to look at that 10-year span. We're going to see the kind of things that have been happening to our politics, the absolute decline in rhetoric, the way we're treating each other has declined. I would make the argument that in many ways it is a result of this money that is flooding these campaigns, because as you have more money flooding these races, people are more inclined to take the heavier partisan stance. And that, of course, leads to division. So money in politics is going to be the primary concern, certainly of my generation, should be of every other generation, because the fact is, until we get money out of politics, how can we know that the motivations of the people that are representing us in our government are true? Because it seems to me that a lot of people are too heavily influenced and make the wrong decisions, and then you go and you look at who's contributing to their campaigns and, you know, what kind of PACs are running issue ads. It's very troubling, and I think certainly my generation is going to see right through it all.
I think, yeah, your generation sees through a lot, which is, you know, in 2020, you really, your generation and the millennial generation really saw a bright future. That's why I think so many really wanted to see Senator Sanders become president, because he was authentic, but he also talked about a vision of a future that all of us could enjoy together, not, you know, exploitation and excessive greed, but one that would lift everybody. And that's a beautiful thing. And that's why I'm so enthralled by Generation Y and the millennial generation. And you give us all great hope. Kimberly Ellis, she is quite the fierce and phenomenal woman. She just launched an organization called Unbought and Unbossed. And in our conversation, Kimberly and I talked a lot about what the needs are of people. And that's all the people from all walks of life, that no matter what our political ideologies are, we kind of sort of want the same things. And how it is so important that in a representative democracy, in order for it to work, the everyday people have to be involved.
You know, I had the incredible privilege of visiting 50 out of 58 of the counties here in California. And it is indeed a beautiful state, a very diverse state. And I think one of the biggest takeaways that I learned was that people, regardless of what part of the state they were in, at the end of the day, wanted the same things. They wanted job security. They wanted food security. They wanted clean water to drink. They wanted an environment that was healthy, not just for them, but that would be around for their children and their children's children. They wanted a government that worked for them. And, you know, a lot of our campaign was really focused around getting the party back to being the party of the people. California is a Democratic state.
Yes.
We run the board. Our governor's a Democrat. All of our constitutional officers are Democrat.
Yes.
We have a supermajority in our state legislature. And so in my opinion, there is no good reason in a state that is controlled by Democrats that we should be number one in terms of poverty, number one in terms of homelessness, that Kern County, which is in the Central Valley, has the worst air quality in the entire country, that public schools here in California rank 47th out of 50. There is no good reason why some of these problems that we face here in California should be the way they are with a Democratic majority in all of our offices. And so a big part of this was really, again, not just talking about our values, but living our values. And one of my mentors, Delaine Easton, who is running for governor here in California, says, budgets are statements of values.
That's it.
It's not what we say we care about. It's the actions that demonstrate what we care about, and a budget is a great example of what we value as a society. And so this really was about, as you said, truth and reconciliation, about making sure the words and the actions lined up, about getting us back to center and remembering our true north. And there were a lot of people for whom that resonated. That's really what this was about. That's what kept me inspired. That's what kept me going. And when we were there, and I got to tell you, as bittersweet as it was, and knowing that we were robbed of a rightful victory. The movement that we sparked continues on even stronger today. And yes. So it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And the people who I met along the journey who are continuing to soldier on and fight this this battle make me so proud. And I'm proud of everything that that campaign did and everything we did. And I have pledged to continue to soldier on and to fight on as well for progressive values.
Well, you make them proud too. I mean, you did this despite the obstacles, and you went to, you know, almost every single county in this state, 50 out of 58. That says a lot. This is a full-fledged campaign. And I remember you telling the story about how much money had to be raised, and I was just mortified. I said, for a state chairship? I mean, this is not running for governor, and you got to raise this kind of money to run for a chairship. This is so that people will understand that both parties, that the system is rigged. It is absolutely rigged, and that we do need leaders in either one of these party structures, but we need leaders who are willing to give of themselves and call out the system and say that I stand here before you to reveal that the system is imperfect, it is rigged, but that I, as a servant, the first among equals, I'm going to try to make some crooked paths straight. And that's what your candidacy did, Kimberly Ellis. I mean, you shook the foundation. And some people have just thrown up their hands and they've said, really, the hell with the Democratic Party, because the corporations have two parties and the people have none. Mm-hmm. But what we were able to do in California is something special. This didn't happen overnight. We had to convince people who were not within the structure of the Democratic Party here in California to run in their precincts so that they can have a voice inside. So what do you say to both sides, to people who want to continue to work within the Democratic Party, but then there are also some people out there who say, the hell with the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I say we need them both. We need people forcing change within the party and people forcing change outside of the party. We won 68% of the elected delegate vote. That cannot be denied.
That's amazing.
And so I would remind folks of something that we as African Americans and certainly as Black women know very well, and that is oftentimes, even though we win, victory is not always granted on that first time. Oftentimes we have to win straight out, win two or three or four times before we actually get to realize that win. And so I just want to remind people, as we are coming up on the anniversary of that historic campaign and day, that we did not lose, that we won in so many ways, and to continue fighting inside and outside for the change that we know is possible, because we are on the cusp. And that is something that no one can take away from us. What they want most is for us to give up and go away. And so what we must continue doing is showing up, because showing up is half the battle, and continue fighting.
In my conversation with Jim Hightower, the former agricultural commissioner in the great state of Texas, we talked about democracy and the Democratic Party and why it is so important for people to be politically engaged, and that it really is the movement of the grassroots that shakes the grass tops that gets us the changes that we need. And so Jim Hightower gave us a lot of advice about how to be politically involved, and that if we don't like what is happening, we should run. I can hear the commissioner saying it now, that we are not just here to resist the government, we are here to become the government. What does resistance mean to you?
Well, it does mean standing up to the powers that be and their deliberate efforts to knock down the powers that ought to be. That is a different dynamic than the Democratic Party has been practicing over the last 20, 30 years or so, which is sort of an accommodation with power. You have to confront power. Often, you know, throughout my politicking period, I've seen people, you know, both sides have come out and said, well, we're far consumers, you know. We want to help farmers. We're for labor, you know. But you can't just be for them. You've got to be willing to be against the powers that are running roughshod over them.
Yes.
And that's the big difference here. And that's what resistance is focusing on the actual leverages of power that are being used, money, political process, social justice issues, you know, et cetera, and going right head on at them, because everything else can be and usually is BS.
We're not talking about Bernie Sanders.
No, we're talking about bovine excrement, as we say out in the panhandle of Texas. So that really is it, because the only real politics in America from the very start, from Declaration of Independence forward, has been over money and power. That too few people control too much of the money and power, and they use that control to get more for themselves at our expense. And that's what's been happening. Inequality doesn't happen, it's caused.
If you had to give a few words to encourage folks, especially folks who are the workaday people that you talk about all the time, who might not have a lot of, who feel as though they don't have any extra time in right. their lives, because when you're in survival mode,
yeah, right.
that's all you're doing. Yeah. You're just trying to survive day by day, and you might not feel as though you have the opportunity to volunteer or to become a member of an organization, say Our Revolution, mm-hmm. or to read the Hightower Lowdown, which mm-hmm. I recommend reading. I'm a subscriber too. Let me put that out there.
Okay.
But what would you say to encourage people to really get involved and resist what? The question is, get involved and what are they asked to resist?
The powers of the elites to direct your life. Some people say, well, politics is messy. I don't want to do politics. Well, then that means you don't care about housing. You don't care about your food. You don't care about, you know, your kids being able to get a decent education. You don't care about the basics of life. Of course you do. All of that is what politics comes down to. And so find some comfort level, some issue that does particularly gall you and you want to do something about, and spend just a little bit of time understanding it better so you can just talk about it to your neighbors, to your family, to, you know, in line at the supermarket or, you know, wherever. Just say, do you know this was going on? You know, and you just have that begins the political process, just to have a discussion about and somebody bringing other people's attention to what's going on. And they already know about it. They feel it, but they may not be thinking about it. So you just build connections and then do a little bit, you know, volunteer an hour a week, something. It can even be done from home, but it's better to do it together. And to recognize that you're in with a whole group. There's a little hardware store near my home in Austin. You can borrow a tool there. They'll help design whatever you're trying to do. And their slogan is, together we can do it yourself. And that's,
I love that.
Yeah, and that's what you have to think of. You know, we can't do it ourselves, but together you can make a lot happen. And just people in your own block, people in your church group, people in a workplace, break room, or, you know, just a few people can make a big difference. And it's surprising, you know, it used to be people don't send letters to Congress anymore. They send emails, and they're not very effective, really. But it used to be a rule of thumb in the Congress that 10 letters opens a file. You know, that office says, oh, so we got 10 letters here. You know, we got to do something. We got to have a position on this. So just a little bit of pushing produces results.
And what can I say about the one and only amazing Susan Sarandon? She is a force of nature. And in our conversation, we really reflected on the fact that we do understand that people are really feeling heavy right now. Some people are even feeling depressed. We talked a lot about what we need politicians to do and what, you know, what we can do to help. But also understanding that people need to be reminded that they really are the hope for the change in this future, that collectively we can change the dynamics of the situation in our community, in our city, in our state, in our nation, and even our world. and that political activism is so vitally important. And you don't have to have a fancy title to get involved. You can volunteer at your local school. You can volunteer at your homeless shelter. You can go to a city council meeting or a town hall meeting. You can volunteer on a campaign for a candidate or for an issue. But whatever you do, you have to get involved. It gives you the opportunity to not only use that energy that you have, you also get a chance to meet amazing people and people who inspire you. And it really is that inspiration that will take us to the next level. Susan also talked about political activism is like rescuing souls. Your craft, I mean, you're skilled, you're an actress. That is what you do for a living, but you also care about the living, what we're living in every day in real life. And so many people of your profession don't necessarily get involved in that way. Why do you do that? You don't need, why do you do it?
First of all, I don't know how I'd live with myself if I didn't, because at a certain point, even before I was media attached, I just came of age in D.C. also, when I went to college, at a time when the issues were very clear, and you couldn't be young and not try to fix what was going on in the South, fix what was going on in Vietnam. You know, it just was part of being young, and then continuing to carry that, you meet the most hopeful, amazing people. So in a world which could be incredibly depressing, as things are unfolding in what seems like an inhumane, cruel regime right now, and all throughout, you know, even before, all along, when you see the environment going, and when you see social injustice, economic injustice, no matter who's in charge, underneath that is a layer of people who just person by person are making a huge difference, are saving life by life, unsung heroes, people that you never hear about that are rescuing souls one way or another, that are changing laws, that are changing situations, that are building houses, that are, you know, putting their lives on the line. So really, it's self-preservation, because if I wasn't involved in grassroots movements, I think I would, you know, really have a hard time surviving. So when people say to me, oh my God, I'm so depressed, I can't, what are we going to do? I said, you're depressed because you're not doing anything. You're depressed because you're not around people. Teachers, nurses, I mean, the nurses are just the most extraordinary.
Yes,
and how about
are.
These kick-ass teachers recently who've
yes.
just taken on state by state what was their due? These fabulous teachers, you know. So every time, if you look, the news is not, especially mainstream media, is not going to be serving this up to you. You know, most newspapers are not going to serve this up to you. But that's why all these kids that are finding their information online were so far ahead of the curve, because they were not hearing the same empty kind of shiny objects are over here and don't look really at what's going on over there. They know what's happening. And that gives me hope. You know, anyone who starts knocking the millennials doesn't know the millennials.
Yeah, they don't get it.
They don't get
it. So rescuing souls. So, you know, we want everybody out there to know that they can rescue a soul or two in their lifetime.
Just a simple act of kindness, a smile, can change somebody's whole day. And then you find something that you feel passionate about, whether it's your school board, whether it's the environment. You don't have to take on the entire world. You know, you just have to try to live authentically and kind.
Yeah, and do what you can where you are.
Exactly.
To be the difference.
Exactly. And then every now and then a person like Nina comes along.
Or Susan comes along.
And, you know, says, believe in yourself and this can change and we can do this and this is where you go and this is who you support. And then you find, you know, somebody like Alexandria who just proves it.
Yes, she does. And she's going to shake it up in that Congress, and we'll be right there helping her do it. I hope this episode has given you some inspiration to take action in your own community, in your city, your state, this nation, but just really take some action, because action is a good thing. And if you want to hear the full episodes of each interview, just log on where you get your podcasts, or you can visit ninaturner.com and you can listen to each and every episode. You know, in the words of Congresswoman Barbara Jordan, what the people want is simple. They want an America as good as its promise. And each episode of We the People, we have tried our best to encapsulate that. People coming together from all walks of life, laying out what our challenges are, but also pointing to how we, yes, we the people, are the solution. We the People is produced by Large Media. That's LARJ Media, in partnership with the Young Turks. I'm Nina Turner.